Father, I want to thank you for each person who has come and for directing this study. And Lord, talk to us. Let us hear your voice. You know, the Bible says, even in John, but in the Old Testament, we'll all be taught by God. We want you to be our teacher now. Send the Holy Spirit so that we can see things from the third chapter of Daniel we never saw before and understand it better. Reward each person who's come. And those that are tarrying, Lord, bring them here so they don't miss too much. So just guide and direct now and take full control. And thank you, you've heard and answered and will do it because we come in our great need, but especially because we pray in Jesus' name. Amen. All right, Daniel chapter 3. Let me give you a couple pointers. Number one, what time period was the book of Daniel especially written for? Okay, write that down. The time of the end. We're going to go to one of the historical chapters now. And doing the historical chapter, I do not want you to miss the fact that it's referring to the end time, even though it's historical. And I think we'll clear that up in a second, okay? Number two, and make sure you get everything written down. The book of Daniel contains what two types of writing? Number one, you say prophecy? Prophecy. Number two, historical. Make sure you got that. There's two sections, or the book is made up of two different types of writing. There's prophetic writing and historical. And this is the historical one we're going to look at today. Number three, what do these two types hold in common? Now, this is obvious from the first two questions, but I do this so that it embeds it in our head. If the book of Daniel is about the last days, and if there's two types of writing, the book of Daniel, what do the two types of writing hold in common? Both the historical section and the prophetic section tells us about the time of the end. I want to pound that in our heads. We've got to get that. Okay? And notice we haven't started Daniel 3 yet. Let's look at the origin of Babylon. By the way, what does the word mean, Babylon? Okay, write confusion in there, and I think you'll see it in the margin of some of these places. Okay, confusion. All right, Genesis 10. Let's take a look at Genesis 10. And we're going to see what we can learn from Genesis, the 10th chapter, about Babylon. All right. Genesis 10. 8 through 10. Now Cush became the father of Nimrod. He became a mighty one on the earth. He was a mighty hunter before the Lord. Therefore it was said, like Nimrod, a mighty hunter before the Lord. And the beginning of his kingdom was Babel, Erech, Akkad, Kelna, in the land of what? Shinar. So who was the founder of Babylon? Nimrod. And what was he? Mighty hunter before the Lord. Write that in underneath part little I under Genesis 10:8. And then listen to what Nimrod's fruits are, folks. Now the whole earth used the same language and the same words. And it came about as they journeyed east that they found a plain in the land of Shinar and settled there. And they said to one another, come, let us make bricks and burn them thoroughly. And they used bricks for stones and they used tar for mortar. And they said, come, Let us build for ourselves a city and a tower whose top will reach to heaven. And let us make for ourselves a name, lest we be scattered abroad over the face of the whole earth. And the Lord came down to see the city and the tower which the sons of man had built. And the Lord said, Behold, they are one people, and they have the same language. And this is what they begin to do, and now nothing which they purpose to do will be impossible for them. Come now, let us go, and there confuse their language, that they may not understand one another's speech. So the Lord scattered them from there over the face of the whole earth, and they stopped building the city. Therefore, its name was called Babel, because there the Lord confused the language of the whole earth. And from there the Lord scattered them abroad over the face of the whole earth. Do you guys remember the command that God gave to Noah? See, I'm not sure we'd have to read all that, so let me help. He said, scatter and replenish the earth. And there was a group that said, no, we're going to build a city. We're not going to scatter like God told us to. In fact, we're going to build a tower that goes farther than the flood so that we can protect ourselves and be our own God. And the result was confusion. The roots of Babylon is rebellion against God. That's the roots of Babylon. Now, I'm giving you this, boom. But you got the verses, you go back, pray over them and read them. And see if you don't see that Babylon, the roots of Babylon is rebellion against God. And the word means confusion because that creates confusion. Take a look at Jeremiah 25. Jeremiah 25, 9, 11, 12. What further can we glean from Babylon? I wonder why I have 9. I guess it starts with 9. Behold, I will send and take all the families of the north, declared the Lord, and I will send to you Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, my servant, and will bring them against this land and against its inhabitants, and all these nations around about, and I will utterly destroy them and make them a horror and a hissing and an everlasting desolation. Moreover, I will take from them the voice of joy and the voice of gladness and the voice of the bridegroom and the voice of the bride and the sound of the millstone and the light of the lamp. And this whole land of Israel shall be a desolation and a horror, and this nation and these nations shall serve the king of Babylon 70 years. And it will be when 70 years are completed, I will punish the king of Babylon and the nation and that nation, declared the Lord, for their iniquity and the land of the Chaldeans, and I will make it an everlasting desolation. So notice the next thing we learn is it actually was the kingdom that God used at that time to punish His people for the fact they simply refused to obey Him. You can get that in 1st, 2nd, Kings, and Chronicles so clearly that you will marvel that God waited so long to put them in captivity. But then He punished Babylon because it overstepped its bounds in the treatment of His people who He put in their hand. So Babylon has always been rebellious towards God. And finally, take a look at Revelation 14:8. This is the point. And now you're going to begin to piece together how the New Testament will use images from the Old Testament in order to convey to us about the last days. Revelation 14:8, and it says, Babylon, fallen is fallen, Babylon the Great, she who has made all nations drink of the wine of the passion of her immorality. 17:5. And upon her forehead the name was written, a mystery, Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and of the abominations of the earth. I saw this woman drunk with the blood of the saints. And finally, 18:2-3. And he cried with a mighty voice, saying, fallen, fallen is Babylon the Great, and she has become the dwelling place of demons and the prison of every unclean spirit and a prison of every unclean and hateful bird. For all the nations have drunk of the wine of the passion of her immorality, and the kings of the earth have committed acts of immorality with her, and the merchants of the earth have become rich by the wealth of her sensuality. In the last book of the Bible, the apocalyptic portion that is so pertinent to us today, he uses the imagery of Babylon to betray what will happen in the last days. And please understand, what most Christians miss is this biblical principle. In the Old Testament, it is literal. It is real. It is local. Babylon, right there in the Euphrates River, in the Mesopotamia. But when the word is used in the New Testament, it stands for all the enemies of God worldwide that act just like Babylon did. It no longer means the place that Saddam Hussein tried to rebuild, even though he knew the Bible said it will lie desolate forever. And by the way, he didn't succeed. It's still desolate. So you see, we look at Babylon and we start to understand in the last days there will be a group of individuals from different beliefs and communities and thinkings that will join together and act like Babylon did in the Old Testament towards God's people. So this is who Babylon is. Okay, so now let's open our Bibles to chapter 3 of Daniel. And notice question under part B, common themes, question number 1. I only wish, I don't know if I dare do this, to give you 5 minutes to read the chapter. I'm assuming you've read it over and over all week. I hope you have. That's what I do. There are common themes throughout this chapter repeated over and over again. Okay, so let me read I'll just start reading and the Lord's got to tell me what to do, because otherwise I'll have to read all 30 verses. And maybe I should do that. Nebuchadnezzar the king made an image of gold, the height of which was 60 cubits, by the way, 90 feet, and the width was 6 cubits, 9 feet. He set it up on the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. Then Nebuchadnezzar the king sent word to assemble the satraps, the prefects, the governors, the counselors, the treasurers, the judges, the magistrates, and all the rulers of the province to come to the dedication of the image that Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up. Then the satraps, the prefects, the governors, the counselors, the treasurers, the judges, the magistrates, and all the rulers of the province were assembled for the dedication of the image that Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up. And he stood before the image that Nebuchadnezzar had set up. Then the herald loudly proclaimed, to you the command is given, O people, nations, and men of every language, that at the moment you hear the sound of the horn, the flute, the lyre, the trigon, the psalmistry, the bagpipe, and all kinds of music, you will fall down and worship the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar has set up. But whoever does not fall down and worship shall immediately be cast into the midst of the furnace of blazing fire. Therefore, at that time, when all the people heard the sound of the horn, the flute, the lyre, the trigon, the psalmistry, the bagpipe, and all kinds of music, all the people, nations, and men of every language fell down and worshiped the golden image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. For this reason, at that time, certain Chaldeans came forward and brought charges against the Jews. They responded and said to Nebuchadnezzar the king, O king, live forever. You yourself, O king, have made a decree that every man who hears the sound of the horn, the flute, the lyre, the trigon, the psalmistry, the bagpipe, and all kinds of music is to fall down and worship the golden image. But whosoever does not fall down and worship shall be cast into the midst of the furnace of blazing fire. There are certain Jews whom you have appointed over the administration of the province of Babylon, namely Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, have disregarded you. They do not serve your God nor worship the golden image which you have set up. Then Nebuchadnezzar, in a rage and anger, gave order to bring Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego to. Then these men were brought before him. Nebuchadnezzar responded and said to them, Is it true, O Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my God or worship the golden image that I have set up? Now, if you are ready at the moment that you hear the sound of the horn, the flute, the lyre, the trigon, the psalmistry, the bagpipe, and all kinds of music, to fall down and worship the image that I have made, very well. But if you do not worship, you will immediately be cast into the midst of the furnace of blazing fire. What God is there who can deliver you out of my hands? Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we do not need to give you an answer concerning this matter. If it be so, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the furnace of blazing fire, and he will deliver us out of your hand, O king. But even if he does not, let it be known to you, O king, we are not going to serve your gods or worship the golden image you have set up. Then Nebuchadnezzar was filled with rage. His facial expression was altered toward Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. He answered by giving orders to heat the furnace 7 times more than it was usually heated. And he commanded certain valiant warriors who were in his army to tie up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in order to cast them into the furnace of blazing fire. Then these men were tied up in their trousers, their coat, and their cap, and their clothing, and were cast into the midst of the furnace of blazing fire. For this reason, because the king's command was so urgent and the furnace had been made extremely hot, the flames of the fire slew those men who carried up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. But these three, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, fell into the midst of the furnace of blazing fire, still tied up. I love this. Then Nebuchadnezzar was astounded and stood up in haste, and he said to his high officials, Was it not 3 men cast into the midst of the fire? And they answered and said, King, certainly, O king. And he answered and said, Well, look, I see 4 men loosed and walking about in the midst of the fire without harm, and the appearance of the 4th one is like the son of the gods. And then Nebuchadnezzar came near to the door of the furnace of blazing fire. He responded and said, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, come out, you servants of the Most High God, and come here. Then Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came out of the midst of the fire. And the satraps, the prefects, and the governors, and the king's high officials gathered around and saw in regard to these men that the fire had no effect on their bodies. On the bodies of these men, nor on the hair of their head wasn't singed, nor were their trousers damaged, nor was the smell of fire even come upon them. Nebuchadnezzar responded and said, "Blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent his angel and delivered his servants who put their trust in him, violating the king's command and yielding up their bodies so as not to serve or worship any god except their own God. Therefore, I make a decree that any people, nation, or tongue that speaks anything offensive against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall be torn limb from limb and their houses reduced to rubbish heap, inasmuch as there is no God who is able to deliver in this way." Then King Nebuchadnezzar called Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego to prosper in the province of Babylon. What a story. Hope you guys are all right with that reading. Okay, first repeated verse 5, 6, 7, 8, 11, 12, 14, 15, twice, 18, 28. What word or phrase is repeated? Worship. By the way, I hope you guys are right, because I didn't write in the answers down. I did everything but get time to do that. I know what I'll do. I'll turn it on. Can you give me the next one? Okay. I think I want two more. I think the next one, I want to just get the image up there. Okay. Is it on? Okay, for the first time, I don't think it's... Let's make sure that we got this right. 5 and 6. In the moment of hearing the sound of the flute, they fall down and worship the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar has set up. But whosoever does not fall down and worship... Okay, the word worship, correct? Okay, it's in verse 7. Okay. What word is repeated over again in verse 1, 2, twice in 3, 5, 7, 10, 11, 14, 15, and 18? Image. Image. And folks, by the way, this is all new stuff. Okay, so I pulled this together. I somewhat got you pictures. By the way, go back one. That I don't want there. But I haven't got to the point where I put the answers down yet, okay? So forgive me. Okay, let's look at 6:11. By the way, that would be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 times the word worship is referred to. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 times the word image is used. And now notice this one, this next one, 6, 11, 15, 8 times, 17, 20, 21, 23, 26, 8 times. Mine says furnace of blazing fire. King James is fiery furnace. By the way, you'll see there's a reason for this. Okay, the next one's mentioned 6 times. To me, 6 is very significant in the Bible. I'll get into that later, but not now. Not that these others aren't significant, but what is mentioned 6 times? This one's a little harder. Okay, take a look at verse 5. No. Because verse 7 doesn't have fall down. Oh yeah, it does. It does have fall down. 6 times it mentions worship the golden image. Now, some say that Nebuchadnezzar said set up, and some say the golden image. But the point is, 6 times it says worship the golden image. By the way, are you getting an idea what this chapter is all about? Worship. Okay? And remember, this historical chapter is written for who? End time people. Okay, what do we have that's written 3 times? 4, 7, and 29, and 3 other times in a different list, but it means the same thing. Okay, people, nation, and tongues. Well, let's see, how's it written? It's written... Let me get this right. It's verse 4, So it's people, nation, and languages. Okay? But notice I also clued you in that this is actually related to the list in verse 2, which happens to be the satraps, the prefects, the governors, the counselors, the treasurers, the judges, the magistrates, the rulers, the province. That's repeated 3 times. So 3 times it says languages and nations and people, and 3 times it says that list. Okay, what is this chapter really about? 3 times it says nations, peoples, languages. But 3 times it also lists those, everybody who's an official everywhere in His kingdom. He brought them from all points of His kingdom. Yeah. Okay, are you ready for this? What is this chapter really about? Okay, here's what it is. This chapter is about the church and the state coming together to enforce worship universally using a death decree. That's what it's about. Now, what do you think the significance of languages, nations, and people? And those satraps, I mean, it's a list of what? 8 things? That means that any official from any part of the kingdom, even if they didn't, you know, they were of a different descent, were called there. They represented the entire world, known world at that time in that sense. Folks, this is about church and state coming together to enforce worship using a death decree on a universal basis. That's what it's about. Now, I'm going to get to some better stuff. Hang on. I mean, we're going to embellish this. But before we do, let us turn to chapter 13 of the book of Revelation. And notice part A is similarities with Daniel chapter 3. All right, did this come as a surprise to anybody? See, you'd make me feel better if you said, "Oh, yes, I never knew any of this." All right, ready? Oh, no, I don't know. When I do this, I learn what I don't know. I don't learn what I know, believe me. That's true. And he stood on the sands of the seashore, and I saw a beast coming up out of the sea, having 10 horns and 7 heads, and on his horns were 10 diadems, and on his head were blasphemous names. And the beast which I saw was like a leopard, and his feet was like those of a bear, and the mouth were like those of a lion, and the dragon gave him his power and his authority, his throne and his authority. By the way, I'm not touching this, but we will go into this thoroughly later. In fact, when we get to chapter 7 of Daniel, we'll take this up. I'm not getting to that now. Okay, so let's look at verse 3. And I saw one of the heads as if it had been slain, and his fatal wound was healed, and the whole earth was amazed and followed after the beast. Now notice the outline. A, similarities between Daniel 3 and this chapter. Number 1, worship. Verse 3, everybody wandered after the beast. Verse 4, and they worshiped the dragon because he gave his authority to the beast. And they worshiped the beast, saying, "Who is like the beast? And who is able to wage war with him?" Verse 8, and all who dwelled on the earth will worship him, everyone whose name has not been written. Oh, I hate it when they do that. In the book of life, in the Lamb that was slain from the foundations of the world. Verse 12. And he exercised all the authority of the first beast in his presence, and he made the earth and those who dwell in it to worship the first beast whose fatal wound was healed. And by the way, we'll talk about that fatal wound who's healed. Notice that's repeated 3 times in that chapter. And finally, verse 15. And there was given to him to give breath to the image of the beast, that the image of the beast might even speak and cause as many as does not worship the image of the beast to be killed. Okay? Chapter 13 is about worship. Okay, now notice image. Take a look at verse 14 and 15 again. This is similarities now. And he deceived those who dwell on the earth because of the signs which it was given to him to perform in the presence of the beast, telling those who dwell on the earth to make an image to the beast who had the wound of the sword and has come to life. And there was given to him a great breath to the image of the beast, that the image of the beast might even speak and cause as many as who do not worship the image of the beast to be killed. Okay? And then what do we have? The fiery furnace, right? Okay, let's look at the fiery furnace. By the way, did anybody see fiery furnace in the verses I already read? Did you? Okay, verse 5. Tell me where the fiery furnace is. And there was given to him a mouth speaking arrogant words and blasphemy and blasphemies and authority to act for 40... Why in the world did I have that in there? Great arrogant words and blasphemy and authority to act for 42 months. I do verse 6. And he opened his mouth in blasphemy against God to blaspheme his name and his tabernacle, that is, those who dwell on the earth. 7. And it was given him to make war with the saints and to overcome them, and authority over every tribe and people and tongue and nation was given to him. I guess what I did is I softened on this and I looked at blasphemy as the fiery furnace. They blasphemed God in verses 5 and 6, and in verse 7, made war on the saints. In verse 15, we already read that. And what does it say? And caused as many as did not worship the image of the beast to be killed. And then finally, next 16. And he caused all, small and great, and rich and poor, and free men and slaves, to be given a mark on their right hand or their forehead. And he provides that no one should be able to buy or sell except the one who has the mark. So in 16, we see that a mark is given that forces you under threat of punishment of economic boycott. Okay? There's your fiery furnace. And then notice that it actually states in verse 15 verbatim, worship the image of the beast. Now notice the universality. By the way, universality worldwide. Okay. Verse 7. Where is it in verse 7? Every tribe, people, tongue, and nation, right? Verse 8. All that dwell on the earth. Verse 12. He made the earth and those who dwell on it. Verse 14. Those that dwell on the earth. Verse 15. As many as do not worship the image of the beast. As many means whoever does not worship. What on 16? All. And verse 17. No one. So what is chapter 13 really about? Church and state coming together to enforce worship under the threat of death universally. So we clearly see, and there's more elements now to go back to Daniel, we clearly see that here's what Daniel is telling us, that what's written in the book of Revelation, I am verifying it. In the last days, there will be an image set up and people will be told to worship it under threat of death as the state comes together with the church, and it'll be universal. It won't just be the plain of Dura now. We get to the New Testament, and it's worldwide. And it's no longer local in just Babylon itself. It is now worldwide. Okay, any questions? By the way, that's the summation. Any questions? All right. Let's look at the conclusion. What is the significance of verse 1 of Daniel 3? Let's go back to Daniel 3. It's simple. It's right there, point blank. What's that, Jenny? You have an answer? Okay, who has an answer? What is it? Okay, this is the fun of reading it over and over again. All of a sudden, one day it struck me. If God gave Nebuchadnezzar a vision in Daniel 2 that showed world history, and he said, "You are the head of gold, and after you comes another kingdom," he turns around, and what does he do? He makes an image of himself, all of gold. Here's rebellion against God. He said, "I'm not going to accept that. And to show that I have the power, I'm bringing all the rulers of the earth here, and I'm going to show how they're going to bow down and worship my image." So the significance of verse 1 is that he's taken things in his own hands, and he is putting himself up. He's denying history and refusing God's will for his life. Number B, what's the significance of 7 and what? Yes. Okay, well, yeah. Did Nebuchadnezzar know about our God before he built the image? Yes. Number one, Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego checked out better than anyone in chapter 1. And by the way, I am sure that he finally heard the story that they didn't eat the king's meat nor drink the king's wine. That he stood out. And then in chapter 2, he was the only one that could interpret the dream. He knew about the God of heaven. This was a very rebellious act. Well, no, he believed it. He acknowledged it. But notice what happens. This is so good. I'm glad you said it. The Bible teaches the parable. The seeds are cast all around on different ground. And one of the very first grounds, what's the first thing that happens? This big ugly blackbird comes and eats that seed before it can root. And so Nebuchadnezzar sat around probably on his laurels and he just let this conviction... By the way, we go through this, you guys. When God is convicting you of something, or me, and we don't act on it, guess what? The conviction... And that's what happened to Nebuchadnezzar. The beauty of this is we're going to see that God kept pecking away at him. Yes. Okay, when he says, like the Son of God, please understand that most authorities recognize that he really said, and his image is like the sons of the gods. They had a concept. We knew it was the Son of God. And that same phrase, Son of God, well, not that phrase, never mind. But we know who the real Son of God is. But they had a pantheon. And he had the understanding that this was one of those gods, at least. Okay? All right, what's the significance of 7 and 12? Therefore, at that time, when all the people heard the sound of the horn, the flute, the lyre, the trigon, the psaltery, the bagpipe, and all kinds of music, all the people, nations, and men of every language fell down and worshipped the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar had set up. And by the way, before you read 12, is that really a true statement? No, that isn't a true statement, isn't it? See, that is not a true statement. Why? Verse 12. King, didn't you tell everybody to bow down? Well, I want you to know there's three people that didn't. They come running up to the king. They thought, oh boy, this is exactly what we wanted. When we heard the king had this idea, we cooperated fully because we figured we could nail those guys this way. They hated Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Verse 12. There are certain Jews whom you have appointed over the administration of the province of Babylon, namely Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, have disregarded you. They do not serve your God, nor worship the golden image which you have set up. Now let me ask you a question, even though I'm going to get to this again. Are you worshiping idols? See, we look at this and we think of an idol as this, or Buddha or something. Oh, I don't have one of those in my house, but you got a TV, don't you? And you got a computer, don't you? And you have an iPod, don't you? What's on your TV? What's on your computer? What's on your iPod? And what if the authorities came in here and said to us, if you don't give up the Sabbath, we're going to do this, this, this to you. And by the way, I'll bet there isn't a person in here who won't say, oh, I'll tell them, go ahead and kill me. Peter said that to Jesus, didn't he? Didn't he? Peter said, though they put me in prison or I die, I will not deny you. And he said, oh yeah, well wait till you hear the crow. The third time. Yes, sir. All right, now you're not supposed to go ahead. Shame on you. Oh, you said chapter 4? Oh, chapter 2, 47. 47, okay. He's got a better mind than I do. 47 says, then the king answered Daniel, surely your God is the God of gods and the Lord of lords and the revealer of mysteries, since he has been able to reveal this mystery. Mystery, yep. His conviction went like this and he decided to put up that image. And that's just like you and I. For the last days, that will be the temptation, folks. If we do not act on conviction, it will begin to melt away.
And I think a rebellion comes when there's a show of power. Then you rebel against that. Maybe, you know, I spoke too quick. I'll show.
Yeah. That's very good. That's very true. Very typically human. All right, what is the significance of 15 and 26? I like this. Now, if you are ready, at the moment you hear, he said, right? Da-da, 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 da-da. And what God, by the way, is there who can deliver you out of my hands? Now, here's the problem. In the last days, there will be God's people who will think like Nebuchadnezzar because they have never tested God or trusted Him. They've worked it out in their own will or way or power or some friend or... He said that very... Actually, to be honest with you, when it says his countenance changed, tells me that because of these three, I think because of Nebuchadnezzar's respect for Daniel, he was kind to them to give them another chance, which probably really made his advisors very angry. And the minute they said, but we're not going to do it, he lost it, which is typical Nebuchadnezzar. And he said, by the way, what God can deliver you from our hand? And then take a look at verse 26. Then Nebuchadnezzar came near to the door of the furnace. Now, does anyone here want to laugh at this point? Is that not humorous? By the way, how many people do you think were on that plane? 8 different categories. He had an extensive kingdom. They were all brought in. And and not everybody got box seats. Right? And all of a sudden, they see the king sitting on his dais after his great victory. Suddenly, and he walks up to the door, and they can't hear probably, but they see him going, yeah. I mean, and when he said to his wise men, didn't we throw 3 in there? And I can see the wise men sitting there like, oh boy, we got Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And the king said that and they go, oh, what a dumb question. They rolled their eyes just like my teenage boys do. What a dumb question. Yes, king, we threw 3 in. Well, how come I see 4 in there? What? 4? They're all looking in there? People are wondering what? Huh? Well, I'm telling the story. The point is, 26 says, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, come out, you servants of the Most High God, and come here. He went from who is the God that can deliver you to what? Most High God. That's right. And I want to highlight that now for you. This is what we need to understand for the last days. God, the word God, is in 15, 17, 25, 26, 28, 29, Aramaic for Elohim, and it means the covenant-making God, or the covenant-keeping God. Write that down. That's what the Aramaic form of the word Elohim means, and it basically means that in Hebrew too. But notice verse 26. Here is actually the Aramaic for you. Ye servants, Abad, of the Most High, Eli, God, Elia, Aramaic. And that means highest among likes. That's exactly what it means in Aramaic. Highest among likes. Those three words, highest among lives. Semicolon, likes, similar, same. Highest among, see, there's the pantheon idea. All right? He's the highest of these gods. It means supreme. It means supreme. We've got to remember as the last days approach that our God is the supreme God. If you don't think He understands where you're at, what's happening in your life, that He doesn't care, or there's no hope, there's no help, I want you to know that's why we have these wonderful stories in the Bible, to assure us. And by the way, I make reference now to Genesis 14. Anybody know who is introduced, a very mysterious person in Genesis 14? Anybody know who that is? Yeah. Take a look at 18. Who is it? Melchizedek. And Melchizedek, king of Salem, brought out bread and wine. Now he was a priest of the Most High God. And there's the Hebrew form of those same Aramaic words. And he blessed him and said, blessed be Abraham of Most High God, possessor of heaven and earth. Blessed be the Most High God, who has delivered your enemies into your hand, and he gave you a tenth of all. And the king of Sodom said to Abraham, give the people to me, and take the goods for yourself. And Abraham said to the king, I have sworn to the Lord, Most High God, possessor of heaven and earth, that I will not take a thread or a sandal, thong, or anything that is yours, lest you should say, I have made Abraham rich. The Most High God. What a change in Nebuchadnezzar. And folks, we get to chapter 4 and find out that he didn't quite get it yet, but God didn't give up. Are you feeling God is going to give up or has given up on you? Good. And don't. Because if that rascal Nebuchadnezzar... Folks, look at the last utterance he has. Check this out. He gets a view of the Most High God, and then he says, whoever doesn't worship their God, I will make a dung heap of their house and I'll kill all of you. He didn't quite have it yet, right? That was his normal response. You can tell that God wasn't done with Nebuchadnezzar. But folks, he kept hammering on that man. And next week we find out he wins. God wins. Nebuchadnezzar converts finally. All right, we're doing pretty good, I guess. What? Oh, thought there was more. What's the significance of verse 18? But even if he does not let it be known, O king, we will not serve your gods or worship the golden image which you have set up. You know, how many of you want to be like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego? What? Daniel 3:18. Yeah, I'm sorry. The significance of verse 18. These men said, we would rather die than do this. Why? Okay. Exodus 20, verse 3. What does it say? You're correct, Michael. And James mumbled it too. I am the Lord thy God, you shall have no other gods before you. But I also want you to look at verse 4 and 5. And it says, thou shalt not make unto thee any graven images or any likeness of anything that's earth above the water. Thou shalt not bow thyself to them nor worship them. For I, the Lord thy God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquities of the fathers upon the children of the third, fourth, and generation. And showing mercy to thousands of them who love me and keep my commandments. And that's the exact phrase Jesus said. If you love me, you'll keep my commandment. And those hotshot Pharisees recognized that he was referring back to the third commandment and acknowledging that that was about him. And showing mercy to thousands of them who love me and keep my commandments. That's why they got so angry. It says we are not to bow down under any circumstances. In the last days, you will be asked to do it. Then you'll be told to do it. Then you'll be threatened to do it. And the only response is Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And only if Jesus is the most significant person in your life, will that actually happen? Because see, we're now going to live in the time of the fiery furnace. We're living. This is a privilege. Paul said, he saw all this stuff, said, I'd give anything to live when they're living. I'd say, Paul, I would have traded with you in a heartbeat, only I don't want to be a prophet. I'm serious. I read about Ellen White. I do not want to be a prophet. What did Daniel 7:25 say? Daniel 7:25. Come on. Hook all this together. They will think to change times and laws. There it is. If you don't believe that the Sabbath is the issue of the last days, you're in for a real surprise. And I have heard Adventists say that. There was a man that some of you who are a little older in here would, if I said his name, you go, whew. The ones that are a little younger, you wouldn't. He's retired now. And a very wonderful man. And he preached a sermon at PMC. And Tony and I were seminarians. And we went there and listened. When he got done, we shot in that back room. We sat him down. And I mean, this was a GC person. And I said, how can you say, don't be surprised if the last day events don't go according to the book, Great Controversy? I couldn't believe it. And I was just a punk convert from Catholicism just a couple years before. You've got to be kidding me. Because the Great Controversy lays out what the Bible is clearly saying. That they're going to come after us according to the law of God because they know that's the issue that will trip us up. By the way, if you ever wanted to know what the lion's den was about, you now know. You now know. I'll get to that later. What does Matthew 15:9 say? There's a beautiful cadence to this. Matthew 15:9. Teaching for doctrines the commandments of men. Teaching for doctrines the commandments of men. I think we could sing that, dance to it. Isn't that beautiful? Revelation 12:17. And Satan was wroth with the woman and went to make war with who? The people who keep the commandments of God and believe in Ellen White. I had to say that. Because it says they have the spirit of prophecy. 14:12, what does it say? Here is the patience of the saints. Here are they that keep the commandments of God. Right? Am I wrong? Oh, and what about 22:19? What's 22:19? Did I stump you? And if anyone takes away the words of the book of this prophecy, maybe it's because I meant 21:19. What did I mean? Blessed are those who wash their robes, that they may be have a right to the tree of life and enter into the gates in the city. What did I mean? What take away? Yeah, it's that wash their robes means righteousness or keeping the commandments. Wait, I'm praying to them. Yeah, you know, there's something there, and as soon as you guys leave and my embarrassment is over, I'll suddenly remember. Okay. So let me do one thing before we do the next thing. I am telling you that in the last days, there will be a law made that everybody agrees with that opposes the law of God. And that's what puts us in our predicament. And they know that exactly. That's why they did this. Are we ready for this? Now, I want you to list, you creative, right-brained people, list the excuses the three Hebrews could have used to justify compliance. Tell me. Here's one my boys say. Everybody's doing it. Right? Come on, give me another one. I don't really mean it. That's a good one. I don't really mean it. What was that? The king told me to do it. We don't want to offend him. He's treating us really nice. And how's this? We can witness to him better if we don't make him mad. How's that? You know, we want to witness to him. So if we just do it this one time. Joe? Okay, today that is very politically correct. Dave? Oh, yeah. Oh, my cuff here. I better fix my cuff. Yeah. Yeah, we can repent later. That's a good one. I never thought of that. That's why I asked you to do this. Donna? What's that? My job depends on it. Candace? One time can't hurt. Yes. Yeah, I'm just pretending to do this. Yes, James. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, just, I know it's not real. See, I didn't put enough lines there, but I saved a lot of paper. You're very creative. Folks, listen, don't ever think that I haven't thought of any one or every one of these in situations I've been in. Especially when you're a teenager, it is very difficult not to conform. And then when you get older, it's very difficult to change once you learned a certain way. In the last days, there will be a law that's passed opposed to the law of God, and we're all going to be put on the spot. And these are the thoughts that will come to our mind because Satan will whisper in our ear. And the angels are going, now Jesus, is Peter going to make it? He said, well, you just watch. And they're going, come on, Peter, come on. And I, well, yeah, everybody's doing it. Yes, Ron? You know, I really appreciate that, Ron. That set off my mind thinking a direction it should have been anyway. I mean, to embellish this. Folks, we are showing people what our God is like by the response we make to these tests. Whether He's weak-willed, whether He's conforming, or, you know, and like the reed blowing in the wind, as Jesus said, or the sands of the sea shifting back and forth with the current. And that's why the world is in the mess it is, and they are looking for an anchor. The anchor is Jesus, and we are the ones that are to direct them to that anchor. And if we ourselves are wavering, We use those today, yeah. Yeah, we use those same excuses. Okay, what is the significance of 25, 27, and 28? Yeah, we're in Daniel 3. We're finished. I mean, yeah, we keep going to these verses for... I'm sorry. He answered and said, "Look, I see four men loosed and walking about in the midst of the fire without harm, and the appearance of the fourth is like the Son of God." What does that tell us about our God? He's with us. He's in the fiery furnace. He is not in the French Riviera sipping a virgin pina colada. He is right in the heat with us. In verse 27. And the satraps, the prefects, the governors, and the king's high officials gathered around and saw in regard to these men that the fire had no effect on the bodies of these men, nor was the hair of their heads singed, nor were their trousers damaged, nor had the smell of fire even come upon them. And what happened to the three muscle-bound, hairy-armed, sweaty, huge soldiers that were the ones that tossed them into the fire? They died. They got consumed. What a God we got. He's not only in the fire, but Isaiah 43:2. What does it say? Yeah. That is correct, Joe. Isaiah 43, verse 2. All right. "When you pass through the waters, I will be with you. And through the rivers, they will not overflow you. And when you walk through the fire, you will not be scorched, nor will the flames burn you." That's what it says. That's a promise. We can claim that promise. Now, if in your mind you're suddenly conjuring up images of all these martyrs during the Dark Ages that died at the stake, it's because at that time God chose to, instead of delivering them from the effects of the execution, but instead He kept them from feeling so they could die as an example that drew souls to Jesus because they were willing to do it. They were willing. Ron? Yeah.
The thing is, they knew these promises.
Yep.
They knew these promises and they stood on these promises.
And by the way, I don't want you to miss, they said, our God is able to deliver us, but if He chooses not to, we're still not going to worship your image. That is so incredible and so important. Look at verse 28. Back to Daniel 3. You're going to get dizzy. This is like a tennis match, right? And by the way, nothing beats verse 26, really, where he says, "You servants of the Most High God, come out here." I mean, that speaks so many volumes, but look at what happens in 28. Nebuchadnezzar responded and said, "Blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent His angel to deliver His servants who put their trust in Him, violating the king's command and yielding up their bodies so as not to serve or worship any god except their own God." There is the essence of the utterance that God wants us to embed in our mind tonight. He wants us to be so faithful, we're willing to give our lives up. And He will use it for eternity. Yes, Larry? Yes, 1 Corinthians 10:13. "No temptation has fallen you but such is common to man. But God is faithful. He will not allow you to be tempted above what you can take, but with the temptation, provide a way to escape that you will be able to bear it. What does Hebrews 13:5 tell us? Is that what it says? I hope it is, and I didn't want that one, although that's a wonderful one. I guess it does say that, doesn't it? Who can tell me where it says Jesus is the same yesterday, today, and forever? That's the one I wanted. Right? You got that? After we looked at this experience, remember, God is the same. Jesus is the same, I mean. God, Jesus, same. Not only did He say, I will never leave you nor forsake you, He also said He's the same. What do you got? Hebrews. Oh, it is in 13. 13 what? 8. 13:8. Oh, it's just below the one I... Oh! You always got to give me credit for being in the ballpark, okay? Jesus is the same yesterday, today. Yes, my Bible says, and forever. My Bible says yes and forever. Isn't that neat? And finally, what's the significance again of verse 30? Now, I should have. Here's what I really wanted to do, and why I didn't, I don't know. But I wanted to put and 249 and 121. The end of every single chapter in Daniel 1, 2, and 3. Who wins? God's people. God. Yeah. See? It started out with a catastrophe and it ends up God rewarding faithfulness. No. Not wavering, but faithfulness. The last verse of every chapter, the very last verse of chapter 1, the very last verse of chapter 2, and the very last verse of chapter 3, all show that after the crisis or event, God's people win. So they stood up, and what ended up happening, they got even elevated higher. Just like Daniel in chapter 2 got elevated higher. And in chapter 1, when we got done with all this catastrophe to God's people by the whole kingdom of Babylon, it turns out that Daniel outlived the kingdom of Babylon. He was still there in the time of the Persian kings, and they made him number two. Isn't that cool? Yes. Okay, I have never heard. Stephanie, have you ever heard any discussion on that? I don't think so. I don't think anybody's ever said that there was just those three. Okay, but one of them, that's true. One of them, he killed his sons before his eyes, then he put his eyes out and took them to captivity, and he died there. But another one he took as a prisoner, but then let him out, and he ended up eating at the king's table. Oh, I haven't seen that. I got to look at that. But if that's the case, then he certainly bowed down. But that wouldn't surprise me. No, not yet. No, no, no. Thank you. There were three deportations. The first deportation, Daniel was taken. It was the fewest number and it was a slap on the wrist. And then this happened 3 years later. Then, I'll get the dates for you. That was 605 B.C. The next date was 598. He came back again because the king rebelled again. And this time he broke down part of the wall, went in and took more captives, and I think took even more of the temple stuff. But when he came back the third time, he leveled everything. But there was years between those events. But this was 605 B.C. when Daniel and these highfalutin teenage dudes were taken there. And this test happened about 3 years later, 4 years later. I think. Yes, Ron. Okay. I have no problem. He texted me yesterday and told me. I wanted to know. I said, Daniel, why? Here's what I heard Mark Finley say, and then I'll ask Stephanie if she knows. I heard Mark Finley say that Nebuchadnezzar respected and loved Daniel, that he believed he sent him on an errand so he wouldn't be there because he knew he wouldn't bow down. It's plausible, and so that has sort of put it out of my mind for me to care about it. But have you heard anything else? Well, that's what I said. But it's plausible, but there's, as far as I can tell, there's really silence. But that's the question, everybody. Well, how come Daniel wasn't there? It's to me, and here, let me give you a little support for that, okay? And Mary, then I'll call on you. The support of that, I find, in all honesty, that the king had the audacity to give Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego another chance. And then it said when they refused, his countenance changed. He had respect for these guys. He may not have liked it, but he had respect for them. And so he said, I'm going to give you another chance. And so it's very likely that he knew and he sent Daniel off. Yeah, but the question would remain, if Daniel was anywhere in the vicinity, that would have raised a whole bunch. I think that would have been printed somewhere. You know, the enemies of God's people would somehow have. Yes. Wait, say that again, Fred. Well, I'm not sure. Nebuchadnezzar may have been afraid that they would bow down, or would have thought that they. But Daniel, I don't think Daniel had any question. Well, how do I know? Oh, is that what you said? Oh, you're afraid that he would have influenced others not to bow down. He sent him on a legal official. Oh, I don't think so. Let me tell you, it's very likely that Daniel did. He knew something might have been coming, but he didn't know for sure what it was, and the timing he may not even have been aware of. He was just sent off, and that's when Nebuchadnezzar struck. I don't know. Yeah, but at this point, I don't think they qualified for the. They may have been. Only Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were elevated to positions of trust within the community. The others weren't. So they wouldn't have been on that plane. They weren't officials. And notice, why do you think it goes over the list of people who are present? It's trying to get us to understand that. God wanted us to know this is going to be worldwide, and He represented the universality by the officials, not by the people. And yeah. No, they hated Daniel because, yeah, the lion's den. Of course, that was the satraps. I mean, that was during Persia, but they. Just by the wording and everything, they hated those Jews. They were upstarts. They were foreigners. They didn't want them there. Yes, first. But you know what? We're all conjecturing now, and maybe we should stop here. Only because, and we can discuss some more later, because see, we don't know where Daniel really went. We don't know what the king was thinking. All I know is this, that church and state will come together and make a law opposed to God's law to put us in a tough position and then threaten to kill us, and it'll be on a universal basis. That's what Daniel 3 teaches about the last days. And what God expects us to do is exactly what Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Instead of situation ethics, he expects us to follow the command, "Thou shalt not bow down to them nor worship them." And remember, Jesus said to Moses, "There is nothing that represents me on earth except the altar of burnt offering." That's the only thing that was allowed to represent God prior to the sanctuary. Our God is a God of sacrifice. Please don't miss that. We don't know all the rest of this stuff.
You have been listening to another special American Christian Ministries presentation. This is a digital recording for optimum sound quality. International copyright, all rights reserved. To order a copy of this or other presentations, or for a free catalog, please call toll-free 800-233-4450. International calls dial 717-652-7000. You may also order from our secure website at www.americanchristianministry.org. There you will discover the largest selection of authentic Adventist preaching available. You can trust ACM. There's no compromise here. If American Christian Ministries has been a blessing to you, why not take a moment just now and send us a note or an email with your testimony? We'll share it with the speakers and volunteer workers to encourage you. Your prayers and continued financial support are very important to ensure the continuation of this ministry as we help prepare America and the world to meet Jesus Christ. He is coming soon.